Welcome to another Science Policy podcast. My name is Simon Locke, lecturer in Science Communication and Governance in UCL's Department of Science and Technology Studies. Today I'm joined by Yvonne Ryding, who is Professor of Planning, Environment and Public Policy in UCL's Bartlett School of Planning. She was also previously Director of UCL's Environment Institute and also led the UCL Lancet Policy Commission on Healthy Cities. Today we're going to ask Yvonne about a new manifesto being launched this week by her and other colleagues from UCL called Five Radical Ideas for a Better Planning System. The manifesto, as the title suggests, calls for a radical reworking of the planning system. So Yvonne, thank you for joining us. Perhaps you could just start by telling us how you and your colleagues came to be launching this manifesto this week.
Thank you, Simon. Well, we've had long debates within the Bartlett School of Planning about the nature of the planning system, what's right with it, what's wrong with it. And when we realised that the general election was coming up at a fixed date, it gave us the opportunity to spend 6 months or so actually thinking through specific kinds of reforms that some of us would like to see enacted by a new government.
That's great. And so your hope is really that this is picked up by the parties as they're going into election season?
That would be ideal, but I think our main concern is that we feel there isn't a wide enough debate about the planning system. The debate is very caught in particular kind of ruts, debates for and against the Green Belt, for and against housing and planning regulation. And we wanted to broaden out the debate to think more radically about what the planning system is, what it does and how it actually operates.
Well, let's move on to the five ideas themselves. Your first sort of key message is that planning should be for well-being and not just growth. Could you tell us a bit more about your thinking behind that idea?
Indeed. One of the problems of the current planning system is the weakness of some of the tools that it has available. And as a result of that, it's become what I've termed growth dependent. The main model that planning operates on is to encourage private sector development and then to take a share of the development profit, either through what's called planning gain or through some kind of tariff system or increasingly what's something called the community infrastructure levy, to provide for a variety of public goods, whether that could be community facilities, infrastructure, green space, whatever. In some places, that works very well. Where there is market demand, where the community are very happy with the development that's being proposed, where there's plenty of development profit, and developers are amenable to negotiation, that can work well. But in many places, it does not. In many places, there just isn't the market demand to make the system work. In other places, it results in demand going, a development going ahead, even when the community are in opposition to it. And we feel that, in a sense, the planning system, by being drawn into reliance on this model, has lost focus on its original purpose, which is about well-being, broadly understood, social well-being, environmental sustainability, as well as sustainable economic development, growth, if you like.
And how do you see these sort of broader concepts being brought back into the planning process then?
Well, I think it goes back to policy guidance. I mean, one of the difficulties currently is the National Planning Policy Framework that I mentioned embeds the idea of a presumption in favour of growth very strongly. It actually mentions sustainable economic development in the document, but commentators have agreed that really it's very pro-market growth. And I think that planning guidance itself needs to be revised. So it takes account of issues to do with equality, justice, environmental sustainability, healthy cities that you mentioned earlier, some of these broader ways in which the planning system should try to shape our towns and cities for general well-being of everyone.
So let's come on to the second key point in your manifesto, which is the argument that planning powers must be radically devolved. Why?
Well, we've had a reform over the last government in favour of localism and neighbourhood planning. Which would seem to suggest that there is that kind of devolution happening. But the reality is that the planning system is very heavily centralised and the guidance comes from the centre. The abolition of the regional tier in particular has removed a whole arena in which debates about key planning issues can be had. And neighbourhoods, communities at neighbourhood scale are finding very often that their opportunity to plan their areas is quite constrained. So what we want to see reintroduced is the proper application of the notion of subsidiarity, so that certain planning issues are dealt with at the level that's most appropriate for that particular issue. That does mean that some issues should be dealt with at a national level, and we advocate a spatial plan for England in the way that exists, say, for Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland in various ways. But also the reintroduction of planning at a regional scale, at an urban scale, at the metro scale, and then at the neighbourhood scale within that, so that different kinds of issues can be dealt within that. Now, the tricky thing is to ensure that you get proper democratic discussion about the planning debate at all those levels. And we don't deny that it's often very difficult to do that. It's been quite easy in some areas to get debate at the neighbourhood scale, but it is more difficult at the urban scale and at the regional scale. But that's something, in a sense, the planning system should sort of face head on and think about how we can get stakeholders involved, what examples we've got of good practice in the past of getting people not just from the private sector, but also from the third sector, you know, community organisations, civil society, you know, organisations involved at these different scales, and really try to make democracy work at all those different scales.
Yeah. So in the manifesto, you talk about this as a democratic deficit in the planning system. I mean, this is an idea that's not just in planning. It's much more widely spread, particularly in science policy, actually. Mm. You know, the idea that wider publics and stakeholders have to be engaged. You identify, though, that, you know, particularly at the local level, they're not really equipped, perhaps, to engage in this sort of activity. So, you know, you've got some suggestions about how that might be improved.
Yeah, I think neighbourhood planning has been introduced on the cheap. And the idea has been that somehow it can just happen. But in fact, you know, stakeholder engagement, as you all know, it requires a lot of resources and attention to be put to it.
Maybe let's talk about a sort of more specific context at the moment. So, I mean, there's two obvious areas to me that, you know, as someone that doesn't know much about planning but reads the news, is obviously the use of the green belts and obviously the housing crisis and the fact we're not building enough homes. How might some of these ideas change the way these issues are, which tend to be quite deadlocked in kind of for and against arguments. How might your ideas change these issues?
Absolutely. I mean, what we need to get away from is that kind of NIMBYist debate, both about planning, but within planning as well. I think the Green Belt has become a kind of, sacred thing within the planning system. What we would like to advocate is that if you get proper debates happening at the regional scale, one can talk about the way in which certain areas could be taken out of the Green Belt to allow for house building, perhaps allowing other areas to be protected for the variety of uses that Green Belt should actually perform. I mean, Green Belt is only useful if it's performing an actual function. And the fact that it's a line on a map is really neither here nor there. It needs to contribute to leisure needs of urban populations. It needs to protect views. It needs to contribute to biodiversity and nature conservation. Yes, and it does need to protect, say, villages from being engulfed by, you know, urban expansion selectively. But, you know, the existing Green Belt needs to be looked at afresh. And the area at which you can the scale at which you can have debates about that would be at the regional and urban scales. And that has been successfully done in some places. I think Cambridgeshire is a very good example where they've been able to accommodate growth, new house building, by taking selectively out of the Green Belt and then making sure they protect other areas around the city as well to protect its particular character. I'm not saying, you know, the debates, you know, don't continue and these areas aren't contested. You're never going to get kind of complete resolution of these issues. But it's a question of opening them up for discussion at the right scale. I think the housing issue is really important because the current government is really just relying on kind of promoting market-led development and then at the neighbourhood scale providing some financial incentives for local communities to take on new house building. But I think we do need to go back to stating at the urban and regional scale that certain amount of housing needs to be built and identifying where it should be built, whether it should be new settlements, whether it should be more brownfield sites within cities, or whether there are certain areas of greenfield and urban expansion that the local community and stakeholders feel are appropriate.
So this actually brings us on to one of the other points, key points in the manifesto, which is about land reform.
Yes.
So do you want to explain your thinking on how you would change approaches to land ownership and use?
I think one of the key tools that the British planning system is lacking, certainly as compared with continental examples, is land ownership. By and large, the British planning system, you know, the local authorities and the planners and the planning authorities, by and large, do not have access to land ownership as a key tool to direct where development should go, to use the negotiation powers of a landowner to indicate what the development should be like. And that is a real weakness. It means that development tends to happen where the private sector has been able to buy land, rather than where would be more sensible, say, having regard to transport infrastructure. It makes it quite difficult to do what's called transport-oriented development, where you have development around transport nodes, which I think everybody would agree would be a sensible sort of notion to have. So we would like to reinvigorate the idea that was there in the garden cities, in the new towns, in the urban development corporations that we still have, of public land ownership being used as a means to actually better planning. This isn't just about selling off public sector land to private sector developers, but about using that land to actually come up with better planned development in terms of where it occurs and what actually happens.
You point to this idea of regulation always being seen as red tape and as a barrier to progress, but you're challenging this idea.
Yes. I think, again, this is one of the kind of sort of set pathways that planning debates run along, that the planning system is primarily about regulation, it's about red tape, it's about constrained development. Now, the vast majority, almost 90% of planning applications are approved. The planning system isn't actually, you know, very restrictive in that kind of sense. It's regulation is there for a purpose. It's to ensure that developments are provided in the right kind of location and of an appropriate, you know, of a good quality, and to meet the various other, you know, ambitions that we have for a more sustainable future. But I think the problem is planning systems come to be seen as very regulatory because the other tools are not available to it. If you have more positive planning tools available as well, then regulation can be seen to play a part in relation to that. But we would like to see regulation, you know, applauded for what it does achieve, because people are very ready to complain when poor quality development actually occurs. So, you know, regulation is the way of actually trying to achieve better quality environments.
Thank you, Yvonne, for coming to talk to us about the manifesto. Good luck with its launch, and I look forward to hearing more about it.